Constantine addressed economic problems somewhat more successfully than his predecessor by issuing a new coinage, the solidus, with a constant weight in gold. This remained the basic money of account in the Mediterranean world for a millennium. Now, this reform eased, although it must be said it didn't end the rampant inflation. Constantine refounded the old Athenian city of Byzantium and, perhaps somewhat immodestly, named it for himself Constantine's Polis, Constantinople, and thus gave to the eastern half of the Roman Empire a capital all its own. This had the result of taking some of the prestige away from Rome, but it also followed and was consistent with Diocletian's tetrarchal reform, that is to say, creating a more effective administrative structure throughout the empire. And in any case, we should say that emperors had ruled from Rome rather rarely in the second century anyway, and Diocletian's tetrarchy had foreseen the possibility of several rulers in several places. Now, the reforms of Diocletian and Constantine taken together sensibly addressed, it seems to me, the third century crisis. But they also altered the Roman regime forever and also provided a stable framework for even more changes. The Roman world became an armed camp. People lived with soldiers in their midst as never before. The fiscal apparatus of the state was now more intrusive. It extracted more money for more military causes. I had said in an earlier lecture that most people wouldn't have seen a Roman official or a soldier. Now, most people would have become all too familiar with those people. The tetrarchal system was a good idea, but familial loyalties could not be totally overcome. So Rome was for a long time governed by a combination, sometimes an uneasy combination, of the dynastic and the tetrarchal system. But the tetrarchal reform did, at the very least, put an end to the intense instability of the third century. The army still mattered a great deal in politics. Whether it had been reined in from its almost unbridled intrusion in politics in the third century remains to be seen, and we'll pick that issue up in our next lecture. But we can say that the chaos of the third century was certainly checked. The roles of barbarian military officers grew greater and greater. They didn't seek the throne. Gradually, however, they became the power behind it. So not only a military establishment of interesting and troubling proportions, but also a military establishment increasingly led by foreigners. The increasingly intrusive Roman government damaged Rome's historic ties with local elites. One of the great geniuses of the Roman world, we talked about this in connection with Romanization, was getting people voluntarily to sort of go over to the Roman side. Now, as the Roman world became more intrusive and seemed somehow to provide less stability, less order, less services, and so on, that posed serious problems. Increasingly, the imperial courts in the East and the West reacted very differently to their challenges, and indeed often became intense rivals of one another. Instead of collaborating, they were rivals. The threats, for example, by barbarians living along the Danube frontier was often met by the government in Constantinople by inducing those barbarians to move west. Well, as you can well imagine, the government in the West was not best pleased by that, but that was very often the policy that was followed. As a result, I think we could only say of sheer bad luck, the Eastern Roman Empire continued to have remarkably successful rulers. The Western Roman Empire quite regularly had incompetent rules, very short periods of rule, or perhaps unsuccessful emperors. So it should be clear, I think, that the Roman Empire had responded creatively. It had responded effectively. It had responded intelligently to the challenges that it faced. And yet by the year 500... the Western Empire was gone. The Eastern Empire, which we will eventually come to call the Byzantine Empire, lived on for another 1,000 years. To understand how all of that happened, we'll be turning in our next lecture then to these barbarians, to these people who have played such a decisive role in the West. Indeed, if we were to talk about the West in this period, what we would notice is that in 300, you have several dozen provinces of an empire. In 700, you have a profusion of Germanic kingdoms. One historian, Walter Goffert, has said that Rome's experience in this late antique period was a creative experiment that got a little out of hand. Another historian, Patrick Geary, has said that the Germanic kingdoms were Rome's last creative act. So I conclude by reminding you once again that we must ask about transformation and about Rome's role in managing its own transformation.